This is an edit of The Dice Men Cometh, originally broadcast on Edge Radio 99.3 FM, and proudly brought to you by our friends at Polymorph Games and Hobbies. Find them at polymorphgames.com.au.
The Dice Men Cometh!
I don't know what day it is. I don't know what time it is.
That is early onset Alzheimer's then.
But I'm back in the country, having been travelling the wilds of America.
Oh, were you away, were you? Yes. I didn't notice, sorry. Continue.
Yes, well, he was given day release, so...
Oh, right.
I was travelling the wilds of America, and while I was there, I saw a few board game establishments. I did partake of a few beverages in said board game establishments, and I would like to regale all the listeners of this fine podcast about board games, card games, and beverages associated with said board games and card games about my travels. Have you gents got anything else to add tonight?
Well, is that going to be the show, just you talking about your holiday, is it?
Why not?
Is this going to be just like some kind of glorified slide night, but with board games and card games?
That sounds like a great idea. Mark's, we could do an audio-visual presentation.
Which would be wonderful for radio.
I'm sure that you guys have got lots of important stuff, because there's so much happening in the world of board games. Of course, Gen Con is just happening right now, live as we speak. If only
couldn't
I
you
was
have stayed
still in America, yeah, I know.
Couldn't you have stayed over there and actually done like a correspondent gig for us or something?
I had to come back to work.
Oh, useless.
Anyway, here we are on a podcast about board games and card games on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. It's episode 178 of the Dice Men Cometh radio show and podcast.
My name is Trent.
I'm Garth.
And in case you hadn't guessed, I'm Mark.
And coming up tonight, we'll be talking the brand new version of Twilight Imperium, a new competition,
yeah,
and...
And, well, seven-player scythe.
And this... Clutch and a healthy dose of paranoia there in the form of X-ray vision from, I don't know, some album. Anyway, it's Edge Radio, 99.3 FM. It's not a music show, it's a board game show. Dice Men Cometh is what we call ourselves. Trent, Mark and Garth here tonight with thanks to Neil and our mates at Polymorph Games and Hobbies. Polymorphgames.com.au is the website.
Mm-hmm.
Now taking pre-orders for Charterstone.
Ooh.
Which is the new thing coming from Stonemaier Games.
Legacy competitive villages, almost?
Village building.
Dice rolling.
Interesting looking art. And also taking pre-orders for Massive Darkness. huge sort of sprawling dungeon crawling thing.
Yeah, the mini fest.
And pre-orders and, of course, purchases for all sorts of other things. And they've been nice enough, because they help us out at the Dice Men, to provide us with a little exclusive promo code for listeners.
They have.
Shall we give that out?
I think we should.
All right.
Well, it is quite simply Dice Men. DICEMEN. All caps.
All one word.
All one word. Chuck that in the promo code section of the Polymorph Games website when you are doing your order for an extra Dice Man discount.
And hey, free shipping over $150.
Speaking of new games.
Yeah.
I got a Kickstarter fulfillment last night.
Oh, really?
My copy of This War of Mine.
Oh, yeah.
Arrived.
Okay. Yeah, and I got to tell you, the production values on this thing look as good as anything I have ever seen.
Wow.
It's absolutely... I mean, I forget how much I paid now, but it doesn't really matter. It's, it is a full-on, top-notch production.
Yes.
Great-looking minis, beautiful art, and a very interesting approach to, well, really the whole thing, the rules in particular. And it's a game that's caused a bit of controversy because it seems that a lot of people in our hobby, a lot of sort of bastions of the various podcasts around board games or what have you, don't seem to like it that much. Say it's a good game, but maybe a bit depressing.
Well, that is kind of what you would expect from a game that is about surviving a war. You're just a person who's trying to survive.
I personally find it interesting that those opinions are coming out of people who call themselves religious in various forms, but perhaps that's a controversial position, and perhaps we should move on.
Maybe we should.
All right.
Anyway, we're looking forward to playing that. But that's not what we're talking about in what we've been playing lately this week.
It is not, because, Mark, while you were overseas...
Over there.
We decided to have some fun.
Yeah. We did. We finally were able to get a behemoth of a game to the table, which we haven't played for a long, long time.
That's because I complained about it so much.
Yes. You complained for it longer than its recommended playtime of only 115 minutes. But we are talking Scythe, but Scythe with 7, with Invaders from Afar, the first expansion, which is the first of currently 2 expansions.
Speaking of Stonemaier games.
Correct. The second expansion hasn't come out yet. So we've already talked about Scythe way back when both Leon and I got it. And again, can't remember how much I paid for it, but it was at the time the most expensive Kickstarter I'd ever backed.
Yes.
Which might have been $150 Australian, including shipping. But that's really nothing.
That was back before the days of these $300 and $400 Kickstarters with massive amount of minis and massive amount of expansions included.
And this was just phenomenal. You just get everything, you know, with it. So that was wonderful. But what we are talking about is the fact that 7 of us sat in a house in the middle of nowhere playing Scythe, 7 players. It was an experience.
Also, this is only the third time I've actually played this.
Oh, really?
Okay. And you might remember I played it the first time and actually wasn't that impressed.
Mm.
And my opinion, I'm happy to say, has shifted.
Okay.
Over time. I'm happy to say that I was wrong.
Yep.
From the start. And I think, like a lot of people, I got sucked into thinking that it was some kind of a merry trash area control game because of all the bling on it. And it we know now that it's not that. But I think when we played with 7 players, well, we'll get into this, we all seem to end up sort of turtling quite a bit. And I don't know if I enjoyed it that much, mainly because I'm really not very good at it. Anyway.
Well, let's get to that. Because
take us through the basics of
Scythe. Yeah, well, look, for anyone who hasn't listened to our previous shows, first of all, shame on you. Second of all, go back and listen, because there's 178?
We are 178 episodes old today.
Third of all, listen for the next couple of minutes and you will be educated on what Scythe is, because it is all about an alternative 1920s Europe where you are each playing competing towns, clans, and you all have giant mechs for some reason.
Didn't everyone?
That are just going to tromp all through the countryside, having fights. You're sort of in the shadow of what is called the factory, which is this middle hex on this hex-based board, which is the sign of the old times. It's closed up. It's decrepit now. But if you get there, you might be able to get the secrets of some power and maybe some ultimate abilities, which would be really exciting. But you got to get there, and then you've got to be able to stay there and not be sort of smashed up there by the other competing mechs. But yes, you're right, Trent. I think a lot of people did confuse this for an Ameritrash kind of game because it comes with a crap load of stuff. Each player gets 4 mechs. Each player gets 2 player boards. Each player gets so many wooden tokens and wooden workers and resources and all of that stuff. Especially if you've got the deluxe edition like I did, which also gets you metal coins and all of those other bits and pieces. And then if you played a few more dollars to Meeple Sauce and got the upgraded component pack, which gives you different player pawns and turns those cardboard chits into wooden chits and all of those other bits and pieces.
Actual bags of wheat.
Exactly. Realistic resources, which you like. But the game itself, after having played it once or twice, you get into a bit of a routine about how it works, because each player is going to have potentially on their go 2 actions that they can do. You've got a top row action and a bottom row action. The top row action is the ones that are going to impact your position on the board. So it might be move actions where you'll get to move a couple of your workers or your character or your mechs around. Or you might be able to go and place a building of yours on the board, of which you've only got 4. Or you might be able to trade some resources, which is going to be either food or wood or oil or one other one, steel, metal.
Yeah.
Yep, or spend all of those resources to produce a sweet, sweet mech.
Exactly right. So those top actions you are going to be able to do, and everyone waits around. But then the second half of your turn is these bottom row actions, which you're not going to be able to do initially because all of those rely on you having already got resources, which you will gather by either trading or producing or something to that effect. potentially even stealing someone's land that has resources. Because what I like about this is when you get resources, you don't really get them. They are on the land that you control. That's right. And that's a nice mechanic for creating a lot more of player interaction. So the game potentially moves around at quite a pace because
it plays really fast. Yeah, you are going to be able... Even with seven players, like there was not... I mean, yeah, there's downtime while you're waiting for... And there's usually going to be at least one person who doesn't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But it really actually moves at quite a clip.
It does. And the reality is you can have your next couple of turns played out, but even if your turn gets sort of squashed or, you know, someone ruins your move, you can quite easily recalculate what's going to ultimately be the best go for that particular turn that you have.
That's certainly true in the beginning of the game as well, because really once you get your faction and know whereabouts on the board you are located and what resources are actually available, your next couple of goes are pretty much sort of done for you.
Yes.
Because it's all about efficiency in terms of converting those resources into achieving those actions on the bottom of your card.
Yeah.
And so it's about efficiency, but then later in the game it also comes to be about speed.
Mm.
Because it is a race,
this game,
albeit one where finishing first doesn't actually guarantee you a win.
No. So, look, the first thing I like about this game is that although everyone has almost the same player boards, the combination between the top actions and the bottom actions are different with every player. So my top action, which might be my move action, the bottom action below that might be, let's say, get out a mech. But Trent, your top action, which might be a move action, your bottom action might be recruit and do something different.
Yeah, and it's the same eight actions on each card, but just in different configurations.
Which is great because it highlights replayability. We can go and play this and have a big different experience every single time, because you've also then got the different factions, all of who have unique abilities, which are primarily when you are going into fighting, or they're to do with movement, or they're to do with your special abilities that your mechs bring to the table. Yep. Because I love this part, that when you do finally have enough resources to start bringing out mechs, you have to choose which one you want to bring out, because that will give you a permanent change ability for the game. So it might allow you to walk across rivers, or it might allow your fighting to be a bit stronger, or you to suffer a bit less whenever you have a defeat in battle, or it might have something else that allows you to pop out of a mine on the other side of the board, because for you, all mines are considered adjacent now. There's really unique abilities which are fantastic. But in its essence, it's quite a Euro game. And you bang on, Trent, that for a large part of it, people just sort of go into their scythe shells and just focus on their little engine because, you know, spoiler alert, none of us won, but Tim, who did, he must have occupied maybe the same five hexes for the entirety of the game.
Really?
The only time he got into a fight was with Leon, who was the immediate player to his left, and they kind of just did it because there was no real massive change of game scenario that resulted in this battle.
By that point, it was pretty clear that Tim was going to win, because he was just sitting there doing the same farming actions, rinsing and repeating. He just figured out the maximum thing that he could do in order to accumulate the coins, because it is all about how many coins you have at the end of the game.
Yeah.
Now, the racing part of it is that you've got six little wooden stars, and as you tick off a certain number of achievements, and that might be winning a combat or getting X number of popularity points or what have you.
Putting all your mechs out or upgrading all your bits and pieces.
You place one of your stars down. As soon as one player's put down all six of their stars, bang, game's over. End of story.
Immediately.
So was it the same number of stars for a seven-player as for a four-player?
Yeah, it was. But it's not the first one to get their stars down. That's just the end of the game. It's whoever's got the most coins. And that can be from a whole variety of sources, including how many territories you actually control, or in Tim's case, just by the currency economic engine that he'd built.
Because this is the thing, is that so many people, and myself included, get blindsided by those stars. You go, oh, I'm going to have a fight because that'll get me another star, or I want to get all my mechs out, which will get me a star.
And really, we actually should have gone and fought him earlier.
Yeah,
right. And so, you know, we're sitting here complaining that everybody turtled way too much. We should have gone out and kept an eye on it, because you really do need to keep an eye on what your opponents are doing.
Yep.
There's no shortage of interaction inside. The board is built in such a way with the tunnels on there that you can really get across there to the other side of the board and attack another player quite easily. So it was really just our own dumb, stupid play style.
Yeah, no, I'm really interested to hear about the turtling, because my thought with seven on a board that's basically the same size is you're going to have to fight each other, because who's going to sit there and not fight? You know, it's going to be so much more interaction. It sounds like it's the opposite.
It was overdue at the end. Yes. Yeah, it was a bit of a relief, to be honest, when we did, because it got awfully crowded. Yeah, but no one wanted to stick their neck out, because, again, from Risk onwards with these area control games, if you initiate a combat and lose, I mean, it's game over. It's very hard to come back from. Not the case with Scythe.
And you really only, from memory, because it's been a long time since I played it, you only can get one or two stars from fighting cards.
Yeah, you can only, and that's the good thing. There are about let's say 10 different ways that you can earn stars, but only two of them are from combat.
Yeah.
Four of them are from upgrading your industry and your race to be as efficient as it can be in getting all your mechs out and all your workers and all your recruits and blah, 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 blah. But you always have to have those couple of fights to be able to get there. Look, what the Invaders from Afar expansion adds is not really much apart from these two extra factions, who are called the Albion and the Tagawa factions. So they already had starting spaces on the original board, so clearly this was already going to happen before the game was even produced.
Yep.
It comes in a nice little expansion box, which basically includes the cards and some player boards, but more importantly, four new mechs for each race.
Some upgraded components as well.
Yeah, but the main thing that these two races bring are some extra tokens. So for me, I was playing as the Albion, which are kind of Scottish.
Yeah, I was going to say, kilts, sort of like a UK type.
Yeah. I had these tokens that would basically allow me to, every time I moved my lead character, whatever square I went into, I'd be able to place a token, and then I could always teleport back to that space. Ah. So that was really cool. Whereas for the Tagawa, which is who Tim played, he was able to do the same thing with tokens, but they were traps. So if someone ever had a fight, the first thing I need to do, flip it over, suffer the consequences. And that was quite fun.
I just want to play Scythe more and more now, because I'm only just starting to really understand it. I think there's a real elegance to it. You know, there's planning to be done, but it's not too thinky. And I think, frankly, it deserves its sort of badge as the new gold standard for this kind of combination Euro trash.
Yep.
Thing.
Clearly, I'm going to have to play it again, because my abiding memory is that sort of feel of, I'm playing Skyrim, but I lose track of what I'm doing, and it's all about the upgrades, because I want to get the new fancy bow.
It is all about
the new fancy suit of armor, except in this case it's the new fancy action, or to be able to move three mechs instead of two, or to get to do an extra thing.
But the problem is you get sidetracked with that, whereas every turn the first thing you should be thinking about is how can I get more money?
Yeah.
Because money equals victory points, and that's where I always fall down.
And the upgrades make you more efficient as well in your expenditure. Anyway, that's Scythe for the second time on the Dice Men Cometh at Edge Radio 99.3 FM. Thanks to our friends at Polymorph Games and Hobbies, polymorphgames.com.au. where you can pre-order all sorts of new hotness, but not as yet the number one game on the hotness list on Board Game Geek.
Oh, yes.
Which is nothing less than Twilight Imperium Edition 4. And we're going to talk about it next.
That was Banoffee with Oceans here on Edge Radio 99.3 FM with an Iceman Cometh, proudly sponsored by Polymorph Games and Hobbies, polymorphgames.com.au. And don't forget...
What's that code again?
D-I-C-E-M-A-M-E-N, Dice Men, plural.
Correct. Now, Trent, I know you don't like to be corrected, and I know you're very rarely wrong, but I do have to say that you can...
Both of those things are true.
You can indeed order Twilight Imperium 4 pre-orders through Polymorph
Games.
Can
you? Oh!
And you can get your extra discount if you put in the Dice Men code, which is uppercase D-I-C-E-M-E-N.
Yes.
So you'd be stupid not to.
Dice Men. Right, well, let's see if you want to order it after I have a talk about Twilight Imperium, the 4th edition, which has been announced in this past week by Fantasy Flight Games.
And this must have been one of the best kept secrets. I mean, I know Fantasy Flight have this habit of, at Gen Con, releasing something, not just like, oh, this is what's coming, but it's like, hey, you know what, bang, here it is, and you never knew that it was coming and that you wanted it.
Well, I think they've done it just ahead of Gen Con at the very last minute for maximum impact.
Oh, of course, yeah.
It's been 20 years since the original, so it's, you know, it's the 20th anniversary edition, if you like. The iconic third edition was released in 2005. And look, Fantasy Flight, no, I think that there's an audience for this, because there's obviously plenty of new younger people in the hobby now,
yeah,
who weren't there in 2005. They know it's a big deal as well, and that's why they've had a documentary film crew following the development of it. I'm not kidding. There is a documentary about the making of Twilight Imperium 4.
Shut up and sit down crew, isn't it?
That's right, that's right. And all we've got is a preview of it now. That'll be out by the game will be out by the end of the year. So what is Twilight Imperium? Anybody want to take this on?
Space opera.
It's space opera in a box.
Okay, good.
Yeah, okay.
Next break.
Dueling galactic empires. If you imagine something like that and you're thinking to yourself, gee, that would take a long time to play. It does.
Yep.
Gameplay-wise, it's essentially the Puerto Rico turn selection mechanic with area control, resource management, and pew, 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 and a whole bunch of modular rules.
Politics in space.
Right. That can be turned on and off and substituted and house-ruled and more and have been, like, with the various expansions. It's all modular.
Mm.
You play with some elements, throw some out. Ultimately, it's just a race to 10 victory points through a combination of public and secret goal cards. I mean,
10.
That's what it boils down to.
You can play this game for 12
yes,
hours.
Yes, you can.
And still not get to 10
average
victory points.
Average less than one victory point yeah. per hour.
Yep.
So the fourth edition, there's been a lot of speculation about it. I personally have speculated that it would end up sort of tying an app into it somehow, just yep. seeing that was the way it was going,
and I figured
that they would take, you know, one of their most prestigious games in that direction. Turns out they haven't. They've decided not to, at least at this stage. Mm. The rules for Twilight Imperium 4 are already available, and that's great.
Mm. Wow,
wonderful sign.
They've put them out, and it gives their audience a chance to proofread the bloody things. And Fantasy Flight can start correcting the inevitable mistakes now.
Yes.
Right? Yep. Because, look, Fantasy Flight are notorious for their rule books, as we've always said. And this is one of the worst examples. The rules of this game are a problem, yeah?
Yeah, yes. Okay. Oh, for sure.
Now, you know, we sit there, we play with these modular rules and things, but there are all these little fiddly bits, right? Like, what do you remember the worst bits of playing?
Oh,
I mean, look, we enjoy this game.
Yeah, oh, look,
but
I mean,
it's a beast.
It's one of the last sort of event-style games where you know you're going to be playing for, like, 8-10 hours, and you know you're going to be lucky to get to the end of the game even in that time.
Mm.
But you're right, looking through the finer points of, oh, how does the turn order sequence go again when you play this particular card, and does this trump that? Oh, but I'm going to play this, but does that come at the beginning of the phase or the end of the phase?
How do I build a spaceport?
Yeah.
How many fighters can I build
yep.
now? How do the PDSs work, and when do the ground
What can
troops?
I load onto what ship? But then because I didn't take it, does that mean I have to go back, or do I lose all those things? Oh, then I flip over this token that does this, but what if I've done this first? Just the interaction of all the bits is crazy, crazy complicated.
So the overall impression is that this is really a major cleanup of the rules,
mm-hmm.
but not a massive change.
Okay.
Right? It's the same game.
Okay.
In fact, I'm calling it Twilight Imperium 3.5.
Not 3S?
There's no app integration, as I said, no hugely new mechanics, still 3 to 6 players, no 2-player option.
Okay.
I guess that's what Star Wars Rebellion is for.
Totally. You know, mm-hmm. right? It plays in the same amount of time.
The main changes are to elements like voting, mm-hmm. like the politics
yes.
or the technology tree, simplifying those parts rather than sort of creating new ones. So some of the specifics, the tech tree is probably the biggest change in that it's gone.
Oh, okay.
Really?
Yep.
That is a big change.
Technologies are now free.
What?
But if you want advanced... Let's say if you want advanced blue technologies, you might need to have 2 or 3 blue techs already
okay.
in order to get that next one.
Because that, to me, I love the tech tree, But it was some. It was very hard to make any ground upon because you've got to get the right planets, you've got to get the right colours, you've got to get the right precursors to get to each thing, and then you find, oh, hang on, I've got one over here and one over here, and they don't sort of really go together.
And there's also some mention of actually being able to upgrade ships now if you have a combination of colours. Of text, so seems to be a bit more flexible. They've done away with the transfer action. Does anyone even remember what that was?
That's where you move the counters from one bit of your board to the other bit of your board.
You can do a strategic action, you can do a movement action, and then there was this thing called a transfer action, which was kind of halfway between them that nobody ever did anyway. they've done away with it completely.
Idea, yeah.
A lot of features from the expansions are now included in the base game, including all 17 factions.
Ooh.
They all have flagships now as well. The underlying math seems to have been tweaked, so the ships have been rebalanced. Voting now only happens in an agenda phase, which triggers only if a player is sitting in Mechatol Rex.
Ooh, okay. Wow.
Right, which taps into the mythology of the Twilight Imperium universe, because Mechatol Rex is the ancient seat of the Galactic Empire, which was vacated, and everybody's got to stampede towards the middle to get to it. And in fact, it's become even more important. The original Imperial strategy card was a source of some controversy with the original version of the game. It once automatically gave the holder 2 victory points just by being there and getting it.
Yes.
It now provides, and later expansions did away with that, it now provides just 1 victory point, but only if you're actually sitting in Mechatol Rex.
Ah, okay. And so how often do you ever manage to stay there for more than a turn or
but
two?
But there's still a little bit of that timing element to it as
of
well.
Course.
Trade contracts don't exist in the new version, but you can trade if 2 players have ships adjacent to each other.
Oh.
I think that's a nice touch. Space docks and PDS constructions are less fiddly. The graphic design and the art have all been given a facelift. And there also appears to be some more diversity in the art with what looks to be a transgender character in the rule book, which I noticed. At least it's a bearded man with a pigtail in what looks to be a dress. So
there you go.
A little bit hard to tell.
Okay.
So US, $150 for this thing. Okay. Now, what's the exchange rate, Mark?
Oh, it's 0.8 at the moment. So 1.25.
All right. So, look, I think by the time you put freight into it and stuff,
$200.
This is going to be 200 more. Oh, okay. So, Polymorph Games and Hobbies now selling it for $227.23.
Well, what's 5% off that?
An additional 5%? But that is already 10%. I think that the standard recommended retail price is going to be $249 at this stage.
And that is worth it.
Yes.
Let me say that unequivocally, that if this sounds like your thing, if you've been putting off getting third edition, if you're new to the hobby, you should absolutely stump up and get this.
Oh, look, if you love those epic game days, which we have and just haven't had the time for recently, are they talking at all about whether the playing time would be shortened?
Are you kidding?
No.
Are you kidding? There's not a chance in the world.
No, it's funny because
Minimum play time on BGG, 4 hours.
Yeah, I did see good friend of the show and, you know, we miss him so much, Nathan, our friend Nathan, who was here in Hobart and introduced... You introduced me to Twilight Struggle, but he was a huge Twilight Imperium fan. His concern was it's going to be so streamlined that it'll go from being an all-day game to a three-hour game. It sounds like there's no possibility of that.
No, I think Fantasy Flight know that as well.
Yeah.
And in fact, you can get a sort of inkling of that from the Shut Up and Sit Down preview of the documentary that's being made, where the designers are sitting there saying, look, this is not our best-selling game, but it is their most iconic.
Yeah.
And it just is what it is. It's that big day-long beast. And look, maybe with a few of the sort of rougher corners cut off, it will be a little more streamlined and it'll get more to the heart of it. But look, if you've already got Twilight Imperium 3 and you've invested in all those expansions as well, which is my situation,
yes.
I'm not too sure if it's really worth stumping up at this point. But you know what? This is a brand new starting point for the game. there's going to be expansions on top of this.
Of course.
So God knows which direction they're going to take it in. Anything could happen.
And I mean, look, so many new people have come into this hobby, even in the last 10 years, that would have taken one look at this and thought, you know, oh, that's an old-fashioned beast, not really interested in that. So this is going to give so many new people a chance to get into this amazing game. I mean, looking at it, it's not my favourite game by any means because I do get frustrated with the length of time. But at the same time, you know, if I've got the time, there's nothing that I'd rather play for 8 hours, that's for sure.
I mean, there is one way you could do it, because the new rules are available. You could just download those and play with the old components. All right, because the components are not that different, and with a few house rules, you might just be able to get away with that. But you didn't hear it here on the Dice Men at Edge Radio 99.3 FM. One thing you did hear about is a competition that we're about to launch.
Yeah, we are. So should we go to a song and do that after?
Details in a moment. Yeah. That's called hooking the audience across the song so they hang around to come back, to learn about how they can win stuff.
Even though they'll be on the podcast and there'll be no song?
Oh, shut up. Shut up. It's live radio.
All right, it's live radio. You're with the Dice Men Cometh With, thanks to Polymorph Games and Hobbies. Go on their website. Save $10. $10? 10%? Plus an additional Dice Man percent by putting in Dice Men as your promo code when you're purchasing something.
Dice Men Cometh has a proud tradition of supporting Australian Kickstarters, and we're doing it again with The Brigade.
We sure are. So we have now got The Brigade, thanks to Red Genie Games, designed by Alex Winter and Ben Hoven, which is smashing it on Kickstarter.
Where's it at time of recording?
At time of recording, it has just passed 200% funded.
Wow, that's like twice.
They could have released two games, and they would have both funded on those statistics.
But instead, they're actually just making this one twice as good. And I love the way they're doing this with the stretch goals, because it, like a lot of Kickstarters, gets bigger as you go. But they're getting their backers to vote for the stretch goals they want in the game. So tell us about those.
So yeah, they've just passed a milestone, which was the $40,000 and 200% mark. They did have a little BGG poll where any backers were asked to vote for a couple of little upgrades. The one that was the overwhelming winner was the big buildings stretch goal, which is going to release 8 new buildings, some with unique abilities, makes the game a bit bigger, more event cards, so it makes it more Burny.
More Burny, you say, because, of course, this is the game of competitive fantasy firefighting, orcs, trolls, wizards, what have you, putting out fires in the town of Tinderbox.
And also elves, which was me when I went on and played it live on Tabletopia with the designers and Matt from the Campaigner magazine. So if you're really curious about how experts play this game, jump onto their Kickstarter page, spend an hour of quality time with a dice man, two designers, and Matt from the Campaigner.
And see Garth be a flaming elf.
A very successful flaming elf.
And be successful yourself by backing this game on Kickstarter now. The Brigade from Red Genie Games.
Only until the end of August. Get in there.
The creepy sounds of Archie Marshall, the Sea Liner, Mark 1, Edge Radio 99.3 FM. The Dice Men Cometh, talking board games and card games. And also talking holiday snaps as well. But
we'll get to that in a minute.
Well, Garth, if you could do something, we've only got a limited amount of time left on the show, so maybe if you could just extend this next bit.
Okay, talk really slowly about this competition that Grail Games has kindly...
Hang on. We don't want to run out of time for when I talk about my travels.
Well, we should also talk about those marvellous, marvellous... marvellous sponsors of the show who are really marvellous.
They're fantastic.
Marvellous. Polymorph Games, spelt P-O...
Oh, come on!
Ellymorphgames.com.au. They've got Clank, they've got Captain Sonar, they've got Gloomhaven, they've got Santorini. From the internet to your tabletop via money that you can pay.
Yes.
But if you want to get a game for nothing...
Yeah.
Here's how you do it.
No. Oh, well, yes, it's true, because we're running a competition.
Yes.
Yes. So sit, relax, Mark. We'll get to you when we've got a minute or two left. That's fine. But look, David Harding, long-time friend of the show, who is the maestro behind Grail Games, games like Elevensies.
Mm-hmm. E-L-E-V. Sorry, go on. Yeah.
Yeah, plus a lot of other ones. But Mark, I saw a photo that you put up, actually, of a game shop that you're in Denver.
I did actually
have... what was the name of the game again?
11Z's, yes.
So look, 11Z's, enough of that silly business, because this is not silly. This is a competition. So David Harding and Grail Games has very kindly given us not one, but two copies of King's Road that we'll be able to give away, plus a copy of Medici the Card Game, which is a streamlined card version of Medici the Board Game, a Rainer Knizia classic. Now...
And Rainer Knizia is responsible for King's Road.
Well, there you go.
Mm-hmm.
Now, we're not going to do any other releasing Rainer, but what we are going to do is we're going to release a competition again on the world. Now, this one is very, very simple, because all of us, all we need to do as listeners, as lovers of board games, is send a little email to us or a little tweet or a tweet to Dicemen at Dicemen Cometh. Is that right, Mark?
Yes.
Okay. Now, you've got to answer this one very, very simple question. And the question is, if you were king or queen for the day, what board game universe would you like to be king or queen of?
Why? That's a great question.
Now,
I was thinking, actually, I would love to be king of the world of 11Z's, because I could just have morning tea constantly. All those biscuits, all those cups of tea.
You could also go feudal Japan and go matcha.
You could.
Yeah, you could have green tea all the time.
So we've got a couple of copies of Rainer Knizia's King's Road to give away.
Correct.
And just tell us what board game universe you'd like to be the king of via Dicemen Cometh.
Dicemen Cometh at gmail.com or at Dicemen Cometh on Twitter. Or you can go on to dicemencometh.com and press a button and send us an email that way if you would like. You can more than likely send us a photo on our Instagram, and you can send us a picture of you being a king or a queen of that particular board game universe.
Okay, well, thank you, Grail Games, for helping us out. That's all we've got time for on the show tonight. Signing off.
There is a little matter of my travels.
Yes, but before we get to that... Jump onto the Grail Games website, because that is where you can also do pre-orders for King's Road and also for some upcoming games that they've also not going to go through the normal Kickstarter route or route. They've got Kashgar, which is the Merchants of the Silk Road. That's the first English edition of that. It's normally just been in German.
Mm.
And you've also got this other game called Crisscross. We'll make you jump. Thank you, Mark. Which is a dice-chucking rolling game, and you should definitely jump onto the Grail Games website. You can do a pre-order there, or you can obviously just purchase any of their other games through their online store.
All right.
Okay.
Mark.
Do I need to pad any more before?
Mark, how was your holiday?
I've been on holiday. In fact, it wasn't really a holiday.
No, sort of it looked like work.
It was a lot of work. Taking my son to America to go to college, getting him settled in. But, of course, it gave me a great opportunity to explore board game stores in another part of the world that I'd never been to, which was Colorado.
Mm.
Is that the highest state in the USA?
Well, I believe marijuana has been legalized.
Yeah.
Everywhere we were, it was at least 1,500 metres above sea level, which is a long way up, given it's very, very flat. So I spent a bit of time in Denver.
This has been fascinating so far, hasn't it?
Spent a bit of time in Denver, and I did want to check out some board game stores.
Yeah, you said that bit.
The first one I rocked on down to was called Go! Exclamation mark. Games and Toys in the Cherry Creek Shopping Centre. I was a bit excited because I'd heard a lot about Cherry Creek Shopping Centre. It's pretty huge.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. And it was one of these fantastic game stores that had one shelf of board games, which had six different versions of Risk and Monopoly and one copy of Catan.
Okay. And that's it.
That game store was a bit of a letdown.
Okay.
But there was a great pizza shop there.
I'm glad to see that those stores also exist in the States, though.
Yeah.
It actually makes me feel a little bit better.
But to make up for that, the next one I went to, and if you want to check out our Instagram, you'll see some photos of this. Trent, this is your dream board game store.
Oh, really?
Because upstairs, should I say, downstairs there's a board game store. Upstairs... there's a costume shop. So you can dress as a wizard. You can dress as a wizard when you shop or play board games. The Wizard's Chest. Not just like a tiny costume store. We're talking a massive costume store. And if you look at Instagram, you'll see a picture of me next to a wizard. But look, lovely, friendly staff downstairs. I had a good chat to Kenny from the Wizard's Chest. He did help me out. I did purchase a game there. Mm-hmm. But we had a lot of a chat about, you know, the board game scene in Denver and in Denver and Colorado in general. Quite a few board gamers, but much like Denver, very spread out because it's a sort of a big sprawling city, quite well spread out. After I left there, though, I went somewhere where, Garth, you tipped me off.
Yeah.
The Board Game Republic, which is a game pub.
Love it.
A game pub.
We need one of those in Hobart.
I went there and I played a game with my son, who doesn't like playing games. We played flip football because he's into sports, and had a beer. Now, the other thing that Colorado has, as well as lots of board game stores and lots of board gamers, is lots of craft breweries. And so you go into the Board Game Republic. It's set in this industrial complex right across the path from a brewery. And they've got beers on tap, all Colorado craft brews, for like $5 a pint. Which,
oh, my God.
It was US dollars, but even that's $6 a pint for fabulous craft beers.
How do prices of board games compare?
They weren't as cheap as I expected, I must admit. By the time I crunched some numbers, I actually realised when I was over there, there was a game I wanted to get to give Garth to say thank you for what a fabulous job he did organising my travels.
So Mark brought you a present
while
you
were away?
No, he didn't. No, but he had intentions to, so yeah. I think that counts.
It's the thought that counts. Yeah.
Well, yes. I was hoping to get it, but the crazy thing is, given that Polymorph Games are our sponsors, is I actually worked out that by getting it with Polymorph Games, it would cost about the same as getting it from the US and then me getting it back, because I was having to ship it from one of those online stores in the US to me and pay extra for the speedy shipping.
Right.
So I've actually put in a pre-order with Neil and Polymorph Games.
Because
get it eventually, Garth.
Okay, so there's a thing in the States where you buy stuff online, then pick it up in the store the same next day or something? Or?
No. So that's more in your Walmarts and your Best Buys. Not so much, you know, you think about Amazon and all their quick shipping, but in most cases, you pay extra for that, and it's still a few days for most of their shipping, and a lot of times they don't have stuff. So that's part of the reason I was going around, was hoping to stumble across these games in store. So the Board Game Republic, I highly recommend it. You go in and you pay $5 to get access to their board game library, and then they've got food, they've got drinks, it's fantastic. That was the last thing I got to go to in Denver. But then I went out of town and I went to a place called Greeley, which is the town where I went to the Nerd Store. Ooh. What a great name for a board game store. And I was having a chat to a young man at the counter called Michael. Lovely young man, Michael, talking about board games. And, you know, I asked him, do you listen to any podcasts, Michael? And he said, oh, yeah, I love a board game podcast. And so I just happened to mention that I was a member of, you know, Australia's leading board game podcast. And he went, hang on.
It's funny how you always seem to manage to drop that into casual conversation.
Yeah, right? Well, you know, it's a topic of conversation. Anyway, he said, oh, hang on, this one? And he whipped out his phone, clicked on his podcast app, and there it was, a little logo with a dice-shaped object and a little monster action pen. This one? And I went, yes. And he went, yeah, I listened to it. And he was 5 or 10 episodes behind, but he knew the podcast.
Oh, Michael, that's lovely.
So shout out.
Thank you so much, Michael. Yeah.
And Mark, who won the bet between you and your son?
Well, funny you should say, Garth, because at the very start of the trip when I said to my son, Will, I'm going to go and check out a few board game stores, he said, oh, you'll be bound to, like, come across someone that's listened to your podcast. And I said, look, as much as I'd like to say yes, I don't think so. So I lost that bet. That's about the only bet I've ever been happy to lose. Anyway, moving on from Greeley and the Nerd Store, I went to Fort Collins. That was one of the amazing things about being in this area of the country, was the names that took me back to the cowboy movies that I used to watch in the 70s, like Laramie and Cheyenne and Fort Collins. Whoa. Anyway, in Fort Collins, I went to two amazing places. The first one, the Haunted Game Cafe. And I spoke to the owner there, Gary, and I went, oh, this is a bit like Snakes and Lattes. and he gave me the dirtiest look ever.
Ooh.
And I was like, oh, I wonder why. And now I know why.
Why's that?
Because Gary told me that they'd been operating since 2009, and they were the first board game cafe in the North American continent. And I was like, no, surely not. Well, today I jumped onto the Snakes and Lattes website, where it proudly says, Snakes and Lattes open in Toronto in autumn of 2010, the first board game cafe in North America.
And thus did the great Canadian-US war begin.
That's right. And so the Haunted Game Cafe was actually the first board game cafe in North America.
Ooh, with Grumpy Gary.
And it,
well, so Gary says. Yeah. I don't know. Can you believe him?
And what I loved about it was pretty much a full board game store with a fantastic range of games and a cafe, whereas in the Board Game Republic, I guess the pub-style thing, they had a small shelf of games for sale, like your Machi Koro and your Ticket to Ride, those sort of gateway games. That was all they really sold. The Haunted Game Cafe was a full board game store and a full cafe. No cover charge at all to sit there and have access to their games. Really great food and coffee and everything like that I saw. Snakes and Lattes charge you to go in and play their games, of course. But, look, Gary was very friendly. I bought a couple of games there. I can highly recommend that in Fort Collins. But just around the corner, again in Fort Collins, I came across what I think is the best board game establishment in the world.
Oh, gee, I hope so, because this slide night's been going on for a little while now.
Dungeons and Drafts. And we're not talking drafts as in what the Americans would call checkers. We're calling drafts as in draft beer poured from a tap. Because this is another gaming pub. But not like other board game pubs where you just walk in and it's people playing games. No. This is a Skyrim-themed board gaming pub.
Oh, get out.
With even a huge full-size set of Daedric armor, which I stood next to for a photo, and you can see on Instagram, as big as me. They had... Oh,
that big?
It was very large. They must have had at least 20 taps that all had local craft beers. Like, this is what the craft beer scene of Colorado is like.
Wow.
It is massive. So 20 different craft beers on tap. There was a group of people in there doing some role-playing. There was another group of people playing, they might have been playing Pandemic. Again, no cover fee to go in there and play games. Great selection of food and drinks. And a shout-out to the lovely Elise that sort of gave me a bit of a run around, gave me a tour, took me up to the bar. I was wishing that I wasn't driving back to another 200 kilometres back to where I had started, but I did have one tasty local beverage.
So this is what I find interesting. We're always thinking here in Australia, and particularly in Tassie, that we don't have the critical mass of population to make these kinds of venues work.
Mm-hmm.
But you're telling me that Colorado and some of these little towns you went to, they're not that big.
Well, I mean, Fort Collins is a large-ish town.
Okay.
Probably not as big as Hobart.
I'm not expecting you to know population numbers. I mean, but it would be useful if you actually prepared before starting this bloody
travesty of a slide. The funny thing was there seemed to be more available outside of Denver than in Denver, mostly probably because Denver is, like I said, such a spread-out city. But, you know, the fact that I went to two game pubs and the oldest game cafe in North America, all in the same state... People say Indiana and Indianapolis is the home of gaming. I'm leaning towards Colorado because it's the home of the gaming pub, and that's where I'm at.
Yes, well, based on your vast experience and travels, clearly.
Anyway, if you're in Colorado, go to any of those establishments and you'll be most welcome.
All right. Are you done?
Do you want to hear the funny story about what happened to me in LA Airport?
As long as it's quick.
Well, I was there for like 90 minutes... And because
this feels like how long I've been listening to this. Yeah, go on.
Well, it's funny because when I flew into LA.
It better be funny.
I flew with United.
Yep.
Garth organised it all very well.
Right. And were my arms tired.
Yeah. We flew into the international terminal and had to go to Terminal 7, which is right at the other end of the airport, to get my next flight. So when I came back and I flew into Terminal 7, I, of course, immediately thought, well, I've got to make my way all the way across the other side of the airport to the international terminal. That's how tired I am. Walked all the way across there at
Someone
brisk
shoot
speed,
me, please.
And then found out that, no, today the United flight back to Australia left from the same terminal as the Denver flight had landed. So I had to make my way all the way back across one of the largest airports in the world at fast pace.
You are right, Mark. That is hilarious.
And got on the plane all sweaty.
Don't forget to email or tweet us about the Grail Games competition. What board game universe do you want to be the king of to win yourself a copy of King's Road? And thanks again to polymorphgames.com.au for all your pre-orders of Twilight Imperium Part 4 or anything else.
Can I pick the board game pub universe?
What's the code on...
Dice Men, D-I-C-E-M-E-N, all caps,
and
all
Mark,
the time.
If you can do it in 10 seconds, you can say whatever you like.
Bye.
Time's up. See you later. Dice Man back next week. Bye. He's gonna say, oh, something about Great Western Trail that I just forgot. You've been listening to another edit of The Dice Men Cometh. It's broadcast each week on Edge Radio 99.3 FM. It's chopped up and turned into a podcast. But if you're curious about listening to the show in its original format, you can do that on edgeradio.org.au. You can also find us on the dicemencometh.com. If you want to support us, you can jump onto Patreon. If you want to support us but you don't want to give us any money, that's fine too. Just leave a 5-star review on iTunes. Yes, I realize I'm asking you to lie for us. And if you really want to support us, get over to our sponsor, Polymorph Games and Hobbies, and buy something for God's sake from polymorphgames.com.au.